Falcon, episode number 27 of the Inside Running Podcast. This week's show is brought to you by the Fitzroy Foot and Ankle Clinic in Melbourne, just 3K from the CBD of Melbourne. We're stoked to have Soph Ryan and Glenn Whittaker on. They're two podiatrists there who are sponsoring this week's show. A bit more about them later on. Welcome to this week's episode, Julian and Bradley. How are we going?
Good, Brady.
Yeah,
how are you?
Good, mate.
Yeah, good, good, good. Hey, the buddy King of Canberra's done it again, Julian. State champion.
There wasn't much doubt, was there? I think we picked it.
State champion, third overall, but the first one registered for New South Wales. Checking Instagram stories on Saturday morning, and here he is pushing the Australian 10K record holder and a world record holder to the absolute line.
Sub 30 minutes.
Sub 30 minutes, 29.50. Jeez, he's good.
I'm sore, that's for sure.
Just dominates every time he rocks up.
Did he win the Masters too?
I wasn't sure. Nah, Benny Shane's a bit older.
He's away from that. Actually, Scotty Westcott, he was having a run. He asked me when I was turning 40. I said, not till 2020.
Oh, shit, that's close.
He's close.
We're proud of you, Brad. Another ripping performance. We'll get into that a bit more later on. Thanks to the Patreon supporters who are thanking this week. Thanks to people that have been along to our Patreon page. It's been a bit of fun, a bit of banter going on there. I did get a bit of a laugh when I checked my mailbox this afternoon, Brad, and saw a photo, signed photo of you in there. That was quite funny.
Yeah, I went to the private collection for that one.
Very good. Hey, we're only going to thank a few people today. We've got a few more people who have signed up for the Inside Running Extra Elite level, and thanks to Carsten Helmers. Carsten, remember Carsten, boys, from Berlin?
Oh, yeah,
I
went out for dinner with Carsten.
You did too, that's right. Yeah.
He was an Ethiopian.
He was a great help over there, Berlin local, and helped us out last year listening to the podcast. Glenn Edmonds as well, thank you. Sean Callier, Christian from Norway. It's always good to see Christian putting some money in as well. Thank you. Chris Hance. Julian, you know Chris pretty well, just come back from his wedding.
Yeah, big hoping.
Yeah, thanks for cracking in some money. Thanks for he's doing a bit of work behind the scenes with the podcast as well. We appreciate Chris's work. Craig Davis, one of your Run Stronger athletes, Julian.
Oh, he's about to crush Great Ocean Road. I'm actually a bit worried he could be coming up on me.
He's always 40K mark. Always happy, that bloke too, isn't he? Like, I've only seen him a couple of times in person, but he's kind of got that Bart Simpson's kind of smile and just always looks very happy.
That's his hair, I reckon, that gives that away.
Good bloke, too, yeah. Good bloke. And Martin Doak, thanks for your PayPal donation during the week. So thanks to those guys chipping along there. We'll have some bonus content coming to you guys in the next couple of weeks or so. Rightio, Brad, kick us off with your weekly recap.
All right. So I planned a bit of a down week, both because I'd come off three pretty solid weeks. It was first week back at school and obviously had Sydney 10 on the Saturday. So I had a sleep in on the Monday and got out for 50-odd minutes in the afternoon. Felt actually pretty good coming off a solid sort of 3 weeks. Ran 4.11s for 12.5K. Got out early on Tuesday morning. And I always find race week, if I'm running pretty quick and not putting in a lot of effort, it gives me a lot of confidence. So by Tuesday morning, like I ran in just over an hour at 4.07s. Felt really good. And then in the afternoon, got out for 35 minutes at 4.05s and just did 500 meter strides. Then Wednesday was my one session for the week. Coach originally wanted me to do a session on Thursday, but there's no way I could get it done with work and everything. So we just moved it forward to Wednesday. So got out in the morning just for 36 minutes, 4.13s, and then the session was 4 by a K off 90 seconds slow jog recovery. And this session and the session the week before where I did K reps, I was trying to use, like I've been doing all of my sessions in Zoom Flies or Zoom Elite, so a slightly heavier shoe. And I thought, oh, maybe I'll race Sydney 10 in the Streak LTs or the Streak LT3s. And as Moose, you'd know those, that they're quite aggressive flats. And every time I got to, say, the third rep, so the week before I wore the LT3s and this session I wore the LTs, about third rep, my calves started to just get really tight to the point that I was almost going to pull the session, pull the pin on the session. And anyway, I got through it. I felt really good. All my K reps were between, let me just bring it up here. So they're all sub three. Yes, I went 257, 258, 259, 255 off, sort of anywhere between 4:30 and 5 minute K pace for the 90-second jog. And I always felt like I had another gear there, but I was just worried about my calves. And it was at that point that I went, well, there's no point risking it for this race. I will actually go through the four percenters. So I made the call at that point. That I'd wear like a heavier shoe or something that I didn't think would bang up my calves as much.
Why were you felt doubting the 4 percenters in the first place, though?
I don't know. I just felt like they were still, I don't know. I feel like because there's a lot of heel in them, I'm just used to racing those shorter races with something that I just feel the road under me. But I think because it's been a few years since I've really worn those flats and I haven't trained in them that much, that my body's just not used to it. And I guess I've strung together so much good training now that it's just not worth taking the risk anymore. So, So then my calves were a little bit tight for the next day or two, but nothing major. Thursday, got out for 45 minutes pretty early because I had the day at an athletics carnival followed by parent-teacher night. So that was a pretty long day, just 4:17s for 45 minutes. Then we drove to Sydney Friday afternoon, and halfway up we stopped at Blangalo Forest, which those I guess international listeners, it's known for a few dead bodies being hidden in the bush, Ivan Milat territory. Oh. You didn't know that.
No.
You know that, Brady?
Did you know that, Julian?
About yeah. Blangalo.
Yeah.
Blangalo.
Yeah. Fucking like Ivan Milat, mate.
Yeah. I don't study up on Ivan Milat in my spare time, boys.
So arrived there at like just after 5 o'clock. So I was pretty much, rushing to get a run done before the sun set. And I felt amazing. Straight out of the car, within two kilometers, I was running. And this for me was a sign that I knew I was going to run pretty well the next day. Like 4:24 first K out of the car, 4:12, 4:07, 4:03. 357, 353, like they were my Ks, and just felt like I was flowing, not putting in a lot of energy. So that was 6K. Got to Sydney that night, just stayed at this cheap hotel pretty close to Homebush. And then the race, did a 5K warm-up, felt reasonable. And then I actually went down underneath the grandstand and just did a couple of the gym exercises that I do at home, just because I find when I do gym and then go and do a run, I feel really good. So I thought, you know what, I might actually incorporate a little bit of this gym stuff into my warm-up, and did that, did a few strides, and then, ended up running, 29.50 for the 10K. There was a good pack through halfway. There's probably eight of us. And it was like the word to explain the race would just be fun. I guess I do all my sessions by myself, so to actually just have people to run with, I knew that there'd be guys there looking to run under around 30 minutes. And like I'd run a few kilometer reps at 3 minutes, but I wasn't sure how I was going to feel running like sustained 3 minute Ks. But within 2 or 3 K, I actually felt really comfortable. Like breathing was good. Didn't feel that stressed at all. I think the hardest part of the whole race was probably the U-turns. There was 3 U-turns throughout the race. And guys like Benny Saint and Ed Goddard, they would get out of those turns really quick. So they'd sort of gap us a little bit and then we'd have to sort of get back on. But Ed Goddard, this up-and-comer New South Wales, he's only 20. He led for 9K. Nobody did any work. We all just sat on him. So going through halfway, there was like myself, Mike Roger, Ed Goddard was leading, Reece Edwards, who's a Canberra boy coach or Canberra guy coached by Dick Telford. James Nipperis was still there. And then with 2K to go, there was probably 6 of us left. And with 2K to go, you sort of go up, it's a gradual sort of slight incline. We dropped a couple there, so there was four of us left. I went to the front with probably about a kilometre to go, knowing that I had to probably try and break guys like Roger and Benny Saint before we got to the track, and strung them out a little bit, but sort of led Benny Saint to the marathon tunnel, and then there's a slight downhill onto the track, and that's when he went past me. Felt pretty good onto the track, and then I sort of tried to accelerate with 300 to go, felt good for about 50, and then realised that I was right redlining it, and Rhodes went past with 200 to go, but third was safe by that stage. And yeah, so Benny Saint won in 29.46, Rhodes was second in 29.49, and I was 29.49.57, so they've given me a 29.50. But yeah, I was pretty happy with how it went. My last K was 2:50 or something, so I can't really expect to close much quicker off the type of training I've been doing.
Do you still go up that kind of ramp when you're, I think you're inside the stadium, but you're kind of on the footpath around the outside?
Yeah, so they've changed it slightly from the time that we did it 3 years ago. Yeah, so what they do now is when you come up that hill, rather than go straight to the stadium, you turn right and head back to the start line and you enter the track that way. So it's a little bit flatter at that section. And so you basically enter the forecourt of the athletics arena and then you run around. So you come into that tunnel from the other side.
Okay, so you don't go up that hill anymore then?
No, you go around, you come around
from the other side. Yeah, but still with three U-turns in there and that kind of where it ramps up that main drive that you come up a few times, like that's a solid race.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I was amazed. Like I didn't expect to feel that good at 3 minute K pace for that period of time. And the whole race I've seen to myself, gee, it'd be interesting to see what I could run for a half now, just based on how sort of comfortable 3 minute K's felt. And I think the strength at the moment is probably my strength more so than my speed. So yeah, look, no complaints from me. And yeah, it was just fun being in a pack and just competing. Like I didn't even really look at what pace we're running at the whole race. I didn't care. I just enjoyed being in a pack for that long.
So good. Cash money for third?
A couple hundred bucks.
Got a couple hundred.
And then got a Facebook message today from the CEO of Athletics New South Wales saying that I was state champ because Benny Saint he wasn't registered with a club for the race, and Rogues is South Australian registered. So there you go.
State champion in the house, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Is that the first time you won a state championship?
No, I think Sydney 10 a couple of years. Actually, Sydney 10.
I was there that day you won it.
Yeah, so because it was Liam Adams, Jake Birtwistle, and Stewie McSween. So they were all interstaters, so I would have won it that year as well.
You went under 30 that day as well, didn't you?
Yeah, like 29.53 or something. So it's twice on that course now, or similar course. So then that was the race. Did a bit of a cool down. My calves were so sore, and they're still sore. So it's Tuesday night now, which I think it's a good sign that I obviously pushed. I can obviously get more out of myself in a race than I do in training because my calves are never like this after training. Drove home straight after the race, had a run that afternoon, just 35 minutes, and felt pretty good, 4:16. And then there was a good group of us out at Mulligan's on Sunday morning. So Philo Saunders brought his squad out, which Keely Small was part of. Rogues was meant to join us, but I think he had a big Saturday night, so he slept in. And then there was Reece Edwards and Reece Langdon, who were part of Dick's squad. They met there for a run. So I got through 30K on Sunday. It ended up being pretty quick, 4:07s, but not as hilly as out at Stromlo. So that was 135K week.
Pretty impressive stuff. Got any questions for him, Julian?
Oh, he seems pretty happy, like, for a guy who came third after leading with 400 to go.
Yeah. Oh, is he in good company?
Yeah, look, yeah, I know.
First race back from a marathon. Do you expect him to win it?
He's in the mix. And you've got to think high.
Like, in hindsight, hindsight's wonderful. If I had to rerun the race, the only thing I would have changed would have been – maybe rather than waiting until, because you know the course, Brady, waiting. So I waited until we got to the top of that hill onto the flat section to sort of make my charge. Yeah. Whereas if I had maybe pushed it on the uphill, I was worried that, because there was five of us, I think there was, yeah, five of us left at that point. I was worried that if I went to the front then, that maybe I'd pop and I wouldn't even make the podium. So that's probably the only thing I would have changed, was that trying to break those guys a little bit earlier, because there's no way that I was going to beat them over the last 350 once we're on the track. One guy's the Australian record holder and another guy's run, 3:45 for 1500 in the last couple of months. So,
run 2:17, mate. You're up there.
Yeah, exactly. I've run a marathon.
I don't know. You'd be a good shot on the track, I reckon.
I don't have that closing speed. But yeah, I was happy with the race, and as I said, to close in 2:49, 2:50 last K. I'm happy.
Tastes guts to go even earlier though, doesn't it? Julian does that. He goes super early. It's a gutsy move. The earlier you go, I reckon.
Yeah. Maybe you'll go a little bit earlier next time and actually break 30 minutes.
Probably need some help from the bloke sitting on my heels next time.
Yeah, very good. I'm going to do my week next because, Julian, you've had an interesting week and we'll get to yours in a bit more detail. My week was pretty similar to yours, Brad. I backed things off a bit earlier in the week. I only did the one session on the Wednesday because I was also racing on the Saturday. My race didn't quite go the same as yours, though. Monday, what did I do? Monday, I did an easy run in the morning, 6K, then an easy 16K in the afternoon. Was really sore off the back of that big weekend last week when I did that 16K tempo and then that faster long run with Dolts. So that was hurting me Monday and hurting me Tuesday as well. So I did 8K in the morning at 4:37s and did my midweek long run on the Tuesday because we moved the session to the Wednesday. Listen to Julian Burnside on the Willosophy podcast. You guys ever listen to Will Anderson before, his podcast?
Not the podcast. I know who Will Anderson is, but I haven't listened to him.
Oh, that's good you know who he is. He's got a good podcast. He just kind of gets deep with people. And he had, Julian Burnside, who's like an expert on refugees and politics and all that kind of stuff. And it was quite interesting. If that's up your alley, I highly recommend checking that one out. Wednesday, easy 6K in the morning. And then I did 10 by 1 minutes on with 30 seconds float in the afternoon. Hate this session. Richard gives it to me occasionally. You just can't recover in those 30-second floats. Average 3 minutes and 5 seconds, 4.85K in the 15 minutes, but just felt uncomfortable from probably the third or fourth rep. Probably overcooked it a bit early. And, just couldn't seem to recover, but it was good to get done and good to do some faster stuff. Thursday, listen to your interview, Brad, with Jake Robertson. That was really good. And a couple more easy jogs. Friday, just an easy half an hour in the morning. And then Saturday, I was feeling pretty good by Saturday. We had our park run's first birthday, so had a bit to organise for that. Jogged down to the turnaround point as kind of my morning shakeout. And I was kind of running 410 kilometres. And I'm thinking, this is good. I'm racing this afternoon and the legs are feeling fresh. And, I feel like I've recovered from last weekend off the easier week. And, went down there and cheered some people on in a bit of fancy dress. And, that was really good to see so many people down there for our first birthday. And then went to Bacchus Marsh for the state 8K cross-country race. Yeah, terrible. Hated it. Every minute of it. I sucked big time. It didn't. One of those races that I just, hated. Haven't had many of them in my life, but absolutely battled. Went out a bit easier after we spoke last time. Brad, remember bringing up that I might have overcooked it a bit at that, Gels Park relays. And, tried to ease into it and kind of moved up a bit about 1,500 metres in and kind of got myself in the pack of people I thought similar abilities, similar times at Gels Park. And, then I kind of got spat out the back at about 3K and almost wanted to pull out. Like the lactic acid was just settling in and I just felt like I couldn't get any rhythm and a few other guys went past me and, probably about 5K and I looked down at my watch and thought, geez, I've still got, 15 or 10 minutes or whatever to go here. This is going to really hurt. But, soldiered on, got it done. Come 19th, not much fun at all. Got in the car, drove home, or got in the bus, went back to Bendigo, got in the car, had a good chat to Richard about it on the drive home to Chuka kind of debriefed a bit there, and then got out for easy 32k. It wasn't too easy. It was all right. Felt all right. Clicked along at 4:13k's for 32k on the Sunday, and then an easy 8k in the afternoon to make it 160k week. But yeah, disappointing race, but probably you get what you prepare for. And I haven't really prepared on the hills and the cross country and that kind of running, and probably maybe a bit too much preparing on the flat, fast industrial estate, getting a rhythm and hold it for a long period of time.
Oh yeah, so I may have commented on Saturday afternoon that maybe you spend a bit too much time at the industrial estate.
Yeah, I've only done 3 sessions out. I looked back on it because I was like, because I have been making a bit of an effort to get to Bendigo and get to Shepparton to get on their measured track, and yeah, but yeah, it was just riding. I just felt like junk, and I'm like halfway through it, I'm like, maybe I need a blood test, and like I'm not sure what's going on.
Can I just pull you up there?
Yeah.
You said you made an effort to go to Bendigo on the measured track. The track is also flat.
No, I made an effort to go to Shepparton on the measured track, but I've been to Bendigo and did those hills with Andy and the long run there about 5 times. Like, I'm trying, but still,
yeah.
I was exposed big time. I was, guys went past me that I should have been able to keep up with. And I'd like to think that if it was the road, I could have matched them. But yeah, the goal for these races is to get strength, and that's what I'm finding. I don't have a lot of. Sorry, Julian. Go.
You don't have to be a cross country runner. Not everyone's a cross country runner.
Yeah, but plenty I used to be half a right at cross country. Like, I've come fourth at Bundoora and stuff back in the day. Like I was, yeah.
Here's a question for the wise man. Would you say that in the past there's been a pretty strong correlation between good cross-country runners and good marathoners?
Yeah, well, there's a good correlation between good runners and good marathon runners, I reckon.
Yeah.
And good runners tend to go well at cross-country, like go well at everything, I reckon. Well-rounded runners do. I mean, but that said, like, you don't have to be amazing at cross-country. It is pretty tough. It's hard to get your rhythm. And when you have a shit day in cross country, there's nothing worse. It is tough.
I was just waiting for people to go past. I'm like, why aren't more people going past me here? I feel terrible, and it felt like I was going that slow. But I think in general, a lot of people felt that way on that course as well.
Yeah, I heard it was tough. I heard it was real tough.
Yeah, not one part about it was tough. The whole thing just put together was tough, if that kind of makes sense. Like a whole lot of little tough bits put together on the loop. But it was a bit of an eye-opener, but good to, as I said, we're not going down there to try to be a champion cross-country runner. We're using it for strength, so when I get back on the road, and that was good to put that in perspective, and just got to make sure it doesn't kill the confidence too much. I think I came home and I was Googling where the next race can be pretty quick to try and get something to get the confidence back up. But good day down there, though. Ali O'Kane, Ali Pashley, Julian, absolutely dominated the women's race. You'd have to be pretty proud of that.
Oh, she's a girl who's good at cross country, and she's always been very good. So,
is she? Yeah, I wasn't sure about that. Yeah,
that's her forte. She really should she should do well this year, and she's going to do a fair bit of it because she'll use that as like race prep and strength prep for the marathon later in the year.
Mm.
But that's her first AV cross country win. It's always a big deal, I reckon, to win one of those races. Sure.
Because both fields were deep, like Brett Robinson, Matty Clark and Nick Earl, first three in the men's, and Ali Sinead, Charlotte Wilson was up there, and the girls, I'm not sure exactly if I've got that order right, but you've got, kind of Australian representatives rocking up to these hard local races, which is good to see.
Yeah, no, I love watching cross country. Like, I love watching AVs be strong.
Mm.
It's something to be it's something Victorians are proud of, I reckon.
Oh, for sure. And the amount of guys that you kind of don't know, like St. Stephen's Harriers just seems to have about a million great runners in their team. Like people are just going past you. I'm like, I've got no idea who this bloke is. And yeah, just some young kids coming through that are really having a crack at those races.
You beat Jack Davies?
Jack was behind me. But I think he's just coming back from an injury though, isn't he?
Yeah, he's coming back. He wouldn't have liked you beating him there.
Wouldn't he? He's one of our patrons. I said g'day to Jack when I was down there.
Yeah, I know. Still wouldn't have liked you beating him, though.
One of your mate from Geelong absolutely smashed me. I was pretty impressed with Pete Kerr's run. He's a listener every week. I watched him go off in the distance. He looks good. He's going to smash you coming up, I reckon.
Yeah. Great Ocean Road. He's doing the marathon.
Is he?
Yeah.
He's transitioning well from triathlon, I reckon. You could be in some trouble.
He transitioned real well to his first marathon, 2:45.
This could come back to bite you.
74 minutes maybe that day.
This could come back to bite you. I won't be saying too much. Tell us about your week.
Oh, my week. Well, I was off Monday, Tuesday, because on Monday I got an injection in my heel, cortisone injection. So as everyone knows, I've been having plantar fasciitis issues. And so the plantar fascia is sort of like a weird sinewy sort of fibrous band that runs along your foot, apparently. And a lot of runners get it. I'm not sure why people get it, actually. I don't know whether there's like a set cause of why you get it. A lot of it relates to training, like maybe your training load has been a little bit less sensible. I don't know why I got it, but I've got it. And after a while, I think they start calling it fasciosis, which is different from fasciitis, because fasciitis suggests that it's inflammation. And then fasciosis, I think, is referring to like lack of blood flow to the area or degeneration of the tissue. So I reckon mine could be the second one now. But anyway, it was hurting me a lot. So great friend of mine and big help, Luke Madley, he gave me a cortisone injection. He's my podiatrist. And so Monday, Tuesday, I was still pretty sore coming off that. And then Wednesday evening was 3 days after, and I had a little jog and it felt pretty good. And then Thursday I had a little jog, still felt good. Friday felt really good. Went for a run with my mate Ryan Christian, who is old school runner from Geelong. Mm. He brought me along to Geelong Cross Country in the first year I think I did it. And he's been living in the Middle East for a while, getting paid some. He was on like a PA. Anyway, he's over there. He's coming back soon. I think he's going to run for Geelong here. But we went out and ran on the hills, and plantar felt amazing. That was Friday. Saturday, just took it easy. Again, just not getting too carried away at the moment. So went out for a jog. Again, felt really good. Saturday I ran with Bree. That was Sunday. Sunday, went down to Avoca wine country area. So some sort of deal was found where we got a cheap accommodation and we got a platter at a winery and free bottles of wine and stuff. So took that up. Avoca's about an hour away from Ballarat. Mount Avoca, it's in the Pyrenees wine region. So it's a pretty nice area. And got out for a sort of run hike in the hills behind the winery on Sunday. Plantar amazing. And on Monday, that's next week's program. So I'll leave that for now.
Just you and Bree on this weekend away?
Yeah, very very romantic.
No rings?
Yeah. No rings. Nah.
Brad was speculating there was going to be one coming out this weekend.
Well, some rings came out. I'll tell you about that joke later.
I've got that one this time.
What was I going to say? That was a joke.
The thing was, Butch, we're really going to try and work your planter issues into this week's sponsor.
Oh,
plug,
yeah.
And so instead you've linked it in that way. Tell us more about plantar fasciitis.
Plantar fasciitis. So basically a few good treatments for it. Shockwave therapy apparently works really well. A lot of people respond differently to it, but this is good because there is in Melbourne at the Fitzroy Foot and Ankle Clinic a bloke called Whittaker, surname, first name Glenn. He is an expert on this stuff, plantar fasciitis, doing his PhD on it actually. And specifically for my like treatment plan, he's actually his PhD is comparing the prescription of a general foot orthotic versus a cortisone injection
long-term treatment success rate. So it's really like I should go and talk to Glenn, definitely. But he is, I think, co-owner with Sophie Ryan, a runner who runs for Old Xavier. What is it? Xavierians?
I just call it
Xavierians.
Old Zavs, yeah.
Old Zavs. Old Zavs. So you see her run around in a, what is it, red and black singlet out in AV. And she's also, I reckon she did really well at the Melbourne Marathon last year. I remember her running fast.
Soph is like legit. I've got some of her stats here. So she also works there as well as a podiatrist. And fourth at National Cross Country. Third at the VCAF Marathon. Yeah, that's fourth at National Cross Country. I just come 19th at State Cross Country. third at VCAF Marathon Champs at Burnley. Fifth at Melbourne Marathon with a Gold Coast qualifying time. She's been top 10 at Gold Coast. Third at Run for the Kids. 22nd at Chicago Marathon. If you've got these issues, I'd be getting in the car to go down and see these guys if you're a runner. Because there's nothing worse than getting, I don't know if this has ever happened to you boys, but you go in to see a medical practitioner with a bit of a niggle and injury, and they've got absolutely no idea about running stuff, and they start asking you, like, how many Ks you run a day, and do you run every day, and what do you have to eat to run that amount of Ks, and they just got no idea. So I always find dealing with people that know about running and who are runners in the medical profession is a big help.
Yeah, because they've generally experienced all the injuries they've got, so they know exactly generally how it feels and what different treatments, how it responds as well.
Pretty much a prerequisite for me if I'm visiting someone. They've got to have some sort of sympathy towards runners. Also, they do shockwave therapy, which is really good for this kind of injury. And I think there's some proven sort of, or there's some evidence out there. And I think, like, my podiatrist definitely suggests getting onto that if you can, if you've got a clinic that does it. And you know what I hate? The internet and people that Google it. Google their freaking injuries on the internet and follow the advice of, like, morons who comment on, like,
get on Facebook forums.
Oh, man. So everyone, first thing you do, visit a practitioner, try to find someone who's dealt with runners in the past or might have an interest in running themselves, because we need to get treated differently, I reckon. Like, someone who's passion and it's almost like an obsession. We're not the average patient. We need a more sympathetic ear to what we do, which is run as much as we can. And we need to be able to, like, have that, I think, included in our treatment plan. And people that understand that and sympathize with that will tend to be runners themselves.
Just reading their notes too here as well. They do dry needling, tissue therapy, stretch, strengthening programs, orthotic therapy. Sounds like they're all over it. And got a good relationship with the running company, Clifton Hill. Your old man, Julian.
Yes, good friend of mine, Christoph. He up there, and he always talks very highly of Soph and the team. Yeah, Chris, they're good. I mean, I won't plug them. They haven't. They're not. they're a good store too. Yeah, they're not this week's sponsor though. So, Soph and Glenn. Yeah, they. I think again, having that connection to another running, like a running store, and a running store that has confidence in a podiatry team. That's big.
Yeah,
that's a big credit.
Have you ever had it, Brad Planner?
No, I haven't. I went to a podiatrist like when I was at high school, and they will basically just put you straight into orthotics. But what I find interesting here is they're quite holistic, because as you said, they're doing the shockwave therapy, but soft tissue therapy as well. Like, I don't know that many podiatrists that do the sort of soft tissue stuff as well.
I think like, without getting too detailed in it, I reckon the podiatry field is starting to splinter, and I won't go too far down what I reckon I've been seeing, but there's like a new school type podiatry that focuses maybe a little bit more on the sporting injury side of things and is current with research and likes to be a little more innovative, which it sounds exactly like a Fitzroy foot and ankle clinic. And then there's your traditional podiatrist who doesn't deal much, who does a lot of toe cutting and corn grinding and foot massaging. But
After your own joke.
Yeah, it's a good joke. But yeah, there's a new school, and I like the clinics. It's pretty easy to tell who the new school clinics are and the practitioners are, because they're interested in what's happening in up to date sort of research for, around injuries, and that's where the shockwave treatment comes into it. I think like that's a lot of good results that we see even through the store. People have tried that. Definitely saying good things about it.
And Brady, I believe Soph and Glenn have offered a 15% discount for Inside Running listeners, as well as a free biomechanical assessment.
That is correct, Bradley. Yep, which is good. We'll put the email link as well to Soph's email account so you can get all the details and stuff there, the website to their web address, all those kind of things. But yeah, I tell you what, I spent a bit of time wasting time sitting in cars to go to Melbourne for irrelevant things. If I had plantar fasciitis, and touch wood, because I hope I never do, but because I've heard it's such a prick of an injury, I'd definitely be taking that up and getting down there. So thanks to those guys again for their support. Sophie does listen to the podcast every week as well, and it's good to be able to kind of do a sponsorship with someone who supports the show. She's a patron. She puts her money where the mouth is and gets the early release every week. So we're more than happy to, I think it's, yeah, good conversation to have around these injuries, and we might try to do them bit more for going forward, because I reckon there's probably a few people out there jogging listening to us bang on about this now who have got a bit of pain in the bottom of their feet.
Yeah, good
news. Let's, for the week, boys, big week of news.
News.
We start with a Kiprop EPO bust.
Aspel killing me. Aspel killing me.
This came out the morning after I did the Jake Robertson interview. It's a shame it didn't come out a day earlier, because I definitely would have been maybe bringing some of this into that interview. But I don't know. To me, distance running is how cycling was 15 years ago, where it's uncovering. It's just getting deeper and deeper and deeper, to the point that I reckon soon somebody's just going to roll over and it's going to come out that so many other athletes are dirty.
I'm with you. The sport's broken.
It's a shame.
It's about to explode.
Yeah.
If we're sitting there, or if you're sitting there thinking, oh,
name removed for legal reasons.
Yes, a lot of conjecture, a lot of smoke, but we can't doubt him too much. He's never been tested positive. Then you're dreaming, basically. Like, there can't be this much smoke around a certain group without there being a fire below it. And if the B-grade athlete, like I had a great conversation actually with Mona today about it, and he was sort of, he's always been one to trust everyone, and he's never really felt like he should be suspicious of anyone really. He's very easygoing, I think. And he was like, oh, when the big dogs are getting done, you imagine how many of the B graders are doing it as well. Like, this is very deep. Especially Kenya at the moment is reminding me of, there's a real, kind of like China, Russia, in that it's so ingrained now in what they do. However, there's no systematic approach, it doesn't sound like. Over there was always someone telling him how to do it and when to do it. It sounds like this is just all like, it's just a rabble in the country, especially their anti-doping. Like, God.
Well, that's one point to touch on, like the lack of testing. And even in this story, like, it's confirmed that he did get the warning that he was going to be test 24 hours or 12 hours earlier or whatever. Reid Coolset has tweeted in the past about when he was over there training and he got the tip off that he'd be tested the next morning. So like, that's definitely not in protocol. And then the whole money side of thing with this Kiprop story as well, like giving money away, and yeah, it's just so dodgy.
Yeah, the money thing's like, I don't get that. It sounds like he's trying to, yeah, I don't know. I just don't get it. It was like $30, I think, right?
It's a crap excuse. It's not like, yeah, it's, he's clutching at straws.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. I get it. And like, he was saying that it was contaminated, but the A and the B were the same sample. And I think they said that if you were to go and try to
tamper to the exact same percentages or get the samples exactly the same, it would have taken a very, like, it would have been very difficult to do that. So it ain't happening.
Stay tuned. There'll be heaps more on this over the coming months, I reckon.
Yeah, the rolled-out effect, though, we've got, this is huge. Like, you look at how many medals he's won, how many people he's left out of finals at Olympics, the sponsorship deals he's got that other people haven't, like, the teams he's made where the fourth person doesn't get to run in a team. Like, this has really affected so many people's life.
Well, I was chatting to Jeremy Roth on Saturday up at the Sydney 10. He was up there, and those that don't know, he's run, represented Australia at Commonwealth Games and World Champs. I think he's ranked in the top 10 in the 1500, like 334 runner. And we're talking about this. He goes, yeah, well, Kiprop would have taken prize money off me at the Sydney Track Classic. You know, like, guys like him have been affected. Like, not big amounts of money, but it's still, you know, money that he should have been given.
Yeah. Yeah, shocking. Watch your space, see what else happens there. Galen Rupp runs 2:06 to win the Prague Marathon. Did you watch it?
Yeah, I did, actually. Yeah, I watched most of it.
Yeah, it was a good race, wasn't it? Him and that other guy out in front pushing each other. Prague's a beautiful city. You've been there too, haven't you, after Berlin? Did you go after Berlin this year?
No, we went before.
Before Berlin, that's right.
Yeah, absolutely loved it. Viv and I, it's probably one of our favourite places that we went to in all of Europe.
It's good watching that. He was so strong, though, when he made his move late in the race. He gapped that guy pretty easy, pretty quick.
Yeah, you couldn't get any different, though, from Boston, hey? Like, the conditions looked amazing in Prague. It wasn't, it wasn't a super deep field. Like, he always looked like he was in control, and it almost looked like it was just set up for him to win in a way. But he did look strong, because I thought he was going to be running high 2:06s, but his last 5K, didn't he put a minute into second in the last 5K? Like that?
Yep.
So it was, certainly a good run, but, a lot easier than Boston.
Yeah, pretty impressive stuff. Be interesting to see where he goes in the, in the autumn, in our spring. New York, Chicago again. He'd stay in the States, wouldn't he?
Yeah, they love the US, right? Look, the US love the US races.
Yeah, isn't it so good for their profile over there, like sponsorship and stuff?
I guess their appearance money's better as well.
A US guy winning New York would go well too.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. True. Brad, give us a bit of a rundown on the female race at the Sydney 10.
All right. So, in the women's, we had Emily Brikacek, who I interviewed for the podcast a couple of months back. She's coached by Sean Crichton and in good shape this early in winter. She won in 32:55. Abigail Regan was second in 33:15. And Paige Campbell was third in 33:22. So it looked like Em was obviously able to run away from them at the end, but pretty close battle between second and third.
Yeah, good times, good races. The other big race, well, it's built itself a bit bigger the last couple of years, and it's drawn a bit of media attention this week, was the Nail Can Hill point-to-point race over the mountain there in Aubrey. Jack Rayner first, 36 minutes and 15 seconds. Andy Buchanan second, the Bendigo boy, 36 minutes and 27 seconds. And the Liam Adams third, 37 minutes, 49 seconds. I would say all those boys were up there chasing a bit of prize money. It was $1,000 first prize. And they've put up this cash bonus, $5,000, if you beat the course record. Steve Monteghetti's got that one. Julian did tell me there's no chance those boys would get close to it, and they didn't. 34 minutes and 57 seconds is Mona's record. So three pretty talented guys. Liam obviously coming off the marathon, but you'd think that Jack and Andy would have tried to give that a pretty good shake, and it's banged them up a bit, and there was still a minute and a bit off it.
Yeah, I think what needs to be mentioned, and it's not mentioned anywhere, is the course has changed since Mona ran it.
Oh,
like,
really?
There's been adjustments on it. It's definitely different, and it's slower now. So although it's a great record, I mean, he ran that at his peak, I believe, like when he was still killing it. No one will get close ever.
Yeah, that's strange to have a course record and offer that kind of money, and knowing it's on a different course.
I think there was just a little change but it was quite a significant to the top, like to how fast you could go on the course. It was just it's not a whole heap different, but just a little change.
Yeah.
But I think that's why they've offered this cash prize. So my physio, Kev Laws, he was based in Albury for a long time, and you know, Nailcan Hill, it was a pretty prestigious race to win. And I think what's happened over the last 5 or 6 years is, like, the top athletes aren't necessarily turning up to it. And they just wanted to sort of get people back running that event. And he knew that that record would never be broken. But people don't know that. So they offer a massive cash prize for the record to be broken to get, you know, because anybody sees there's a, you know, chance to win $5,000. Why not? And it's worked. Look at the top three. That's the deepest field they've had in the last 10 years, I would say, easily.
Mm. Well, the top three were. It was only the three boys, and then it dropped off. So, like, I think Victoria Mitchell was fourth overall, and she won the females in 42 minutes and 46 seconds. Leanne Pomponini was second in 44 minutes and 8 seconds, and Charlotte Wilson, Liam's partner from a couple of weeks ago, interviewed her 46 minutes, 41 seconds. So, yeah, you're getting some quality athletes there, but the big story to come out of it was Victoria Mitchell broke the female course record by, I think, a minute, but was not awarded the $5,000 bonus because that was just tied to the course record overall, not the female course record. Bit of controversy there, and she made a couple of statements. I might get those up while you talk, Julian.
You get them up. Because what I always read was that it was the course record, not the male record and the female record. They've always just sort of had a course record.
But the course record is the male record.
Well, a male ran it, but it is a course record. A male ran it last time it was set.
Yeah, and the time, it's always going to be a male record.
Probably. Well, I just said that it would never get broken, so it is always going to be a male record from now on, from Monaghetti onwards.
Yeah.
However,
2003, he ran it.
Yeah, shit. He was going well then.
Do you reckon? Still, I reckon that was almost past. That was past his best.
He ran the fucking marathon in 2000 at the Olympics.
Yeah.
And
he
kept going.
And this is 3 years later. Yeah, he kept going, but he wasn't in the form of his life.
Oh, did I say the form of his life? I said he was going well. He was going well until he was 54.
Yeah.
Anyway, I found it interesting that, like...
Do you want me to read the comments?
Yeah, read them. Go.
This is from the Border Mail, their local newspaper up there in Albury. Mitchell of Mansfield, who placed fifth overall, said offering just the one prize for the race record was discriminatory. My issue is they supported the men's record and not the women's, she said. I just find that really sexist and major inequality, and it shouldn't be happening. How can you do that in this day and age?
Well, as a protest, why don't you hand back your prize money? That you, like, none of these complaints came out.
Is that a different issue, though, like, with talking about... Because I know the same articles talked about charity, and all that's amazing. Like, it's, they've kind of brought that in as a separate kind of conversation. But do you think she should hand back...
The race offers the equal prize money, men and ladies, right? So Vic Mitchell won the same as Jack Rayner did. And Vic Mitchell should have read on the website that... There was a cash prize bonus to the win, like the course record, which is not gender specific. It's the course record. Like, this was advertised clearly. They weren't hiding it. It wasn't devious. It wasn't sneaky. And there was still a lot of cash on offer, which is clearly why she went up there. She won the money. And it seems like in the car on the way home, after she collected the prize money, that found that that was a good time to start tweeting or to start making comments about how this was a sexist race or discriminatory, whatever. This record is unique, this Monaghetti record. They're not, like, this is a charity event. We have to remember this is a fun run. And the locals are very unhappy with her. I can tell you right now, there's not a single person in that town that is, women included, that think it's sexist that the course record is discriminatory, or the putting of money on is discriminatory. Steve Monteghetti came and ran it, and he broke the record that year, and that's why there is money being put to see if anyone can break his record. The ladies' record was weak.
So, but shouldn't it we still celebrate female records and stuff and build them? Like, Victoria Mitchell's been to Olympics and Commonwealth Games, and I know she's not in the same class as Monteghetti as a hero of Australian distance runner, but isn't this a great time to say, let's put her up there and kind of celebrate females distance runner? And, like, I think we need it. Like, you're kidding yourself if you think that let's just have one course record and let men and female both have a crack at it. Like, isn't this a great chance to separate them and celebrate them when they go down?
So we're separating them now. That's equality, is it, when we separate them? We want them separated.
I think it's safe to say that you have a men's record and a female record.
Well,
just like you do in every other
course record.
Yeah.
This is a course record.
For men and for females.
Exactly.
And she broke the course record for the females.
No, she didn't break the course record. The course record is the course record. Well, was she wearing a red hat? Did she break the course record for people with red hats?
You see, well, I'm not getting into all those kind of ones. And I've read those same Facebook comments and stuff, and I imagine all those Facebook people, the similar ones that were calling out Michael Shelley for not knowing a lot about the event and stuff. But, yeah.
I know. I see her point. I'm going to give her that.
I think
when you look at it, the race organisers will have had to get insurance to put that record on for that. Like, that's how I think I'm very confident this is how it works. When you put on a bonus for a course record, you have to go to an insurance company and they assess how much you pay for insurance if it gets broken, and they'll pay it out if it does. It's almost like a gamble. So for them, they would have looked at the female world record and said, oh yeah, this insurance is going to cost you like $4,000 or something like that. And the insurance on the men's might have cost them $300 or something along those lines. I remember they looked at doing this for the lap of the lake in Ballarat to see if anyone could break Mona's record. They had to go and get insurance if they were going to put a prize up. It was really interesting.
Yeah,
and so,
right. Could you think for like a big company like Vitasoy sponsoring it? Like, $5,000 is not a huge amount for them to pay out, is it?
Oh well, I mean, they might not have got insurance, but that's how they did it.
And if they're certain that the men's isn't going to go down, like as you kind of said, they're kind of putting it out there, knowing no one's going to have a crack, be able to get near it.
Yeah, I mean, this was what did she break it by a minute or something? The record,
but the website. And I've actually sent you boys a photo of the website. It clearly shows the prizes. So there's a reef, which basically has male winner $1,000. Then in the middle, it's got beat the race record 34.57, $5,000. And then it's got female winner $1,000. So on the website, it actually states clearly what you have to run to win $5,000. Whether it's right or wrong is another debate.
She showed up to a race and clearly advertised
what she had to run to win $5,000.
On their prize money page on the website, though, it says prize money first dot point new race record $5,000. And then did you see the Instagram story she put up about how it said, in brackets said both genders, and I think she's probably read that as both genders are separate, not both genders are going as the same for the same. There's just too much confusion. Sort it out. We can talk about this all night, but yeah, I thought it was probably just a no-brainer. Just celebrate both events. Don't know.
Picked up a thousand bucks.
Jack picked up $1,000. They both got $1,000. They'll probably have a good talk at their next board meeting, I reckon, about what they do going forward with race records. Probably got the good publicity they deserve to get more people there next year.
Yeah, I reckon they're going to keep it.
Don't know about good publicity.
I reckon
they're
going to keep it exactly the same. No, it's fine publicity. I'm good with it.
Any publicity is good publicity, isn't it? Isn't that some saying about that?
Maybe.
We might throw that one out to the listeners to see what they reckon. Listener question, both shoe related this week. First one, both you're going to have to answer both these, Julian, because
yeah, I like this.
I can't, that's why I put them both in there together for you. First one's from Tisdale. Thanks to all the people that send in listener questions. Listener question, has Monna or any of the other Australian marathon legends worn the Nike Vaporfly 4%? How fast does he think he could have gone if he was wearing them?
Okay.
Too chunky for Monna.
Easy answer.
I think we spoke about this before.
This guy wants, like, Monna, he loves the lightest, closest to the deck shoe that you can get. These things are high, they're spongy. They are exactly what he does not like in a shoe. So I'm going to say he doesn't have a pair. He's got the Zoom Flies. He does a bit of jogging in them but finds them too chunky. So he would not race in that shoe. So answer is, how fast do you think he could have gone in them? Oh, just wouldn't have worn them. It's almost like a
But if he did put them on in shape, do you reckon he would have went quicker or just hate them and chucked them off straight away?
Yeah, they're not for everyone, this shoe. Not everyone loves them. So if you like to feel the deck, if you like low stack heights on your shoes, you like more response, then this isn't the right shoe for you.
Good answer there, I reckon. What about guys like Deke and Derek Clayton and all those kind of guys? Have they had a pair back in the day?
No, who knows? Fuck. I mean, not that much faster. Jeez, I don't think it makes that much of a difference.
Well, we're all wearing them now, and we're not. No one's going as quick as those guys, 208s and stuff. So
yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. Not that much difference.
Russell Andrews, one. This is from Russell Andrews. Thanks for writing in. After this week's talk of the show, After this week's talk of shoes, I was curious to hear what you guys feel is the best bang for your buck or most miles per dollar everyday trainer around. As a sub-3-hour marathoner, just doing moderate miles of around 80 to 90 Ks a week, it seems I'm regularly forking out for new shoes. Do you have any tips? Tips apart from owning a running store. Good joke, Russell.
Do you have any? Okay. So one of the benefits of running more is you get fitter. You enjoy your life. You're healthy. You improve your PBs. You're more social. I think you have less chance of getting mental illness. One of the fallbacks is you might lose a few social friends who like drinking and you have to buy running shoes. So for me, I think...
I'm wondering when you're going to get to answering the question.
He's been thinking about this one.
No.
This is the next ad for the running company, Ballarat, I reckon, right here.
What Russell needs to do is become a triathlete for a year. Then he'll work out that buying a shoe every 3 months isn't a big deal in the wallet department. When you don't have bikes to pay for, pool memberships, wetsuits, coaching squad fees, maintenance on bikes, helmets, trainers, the race fees, bike shoes, and when you're a triathlete, you have to have a visor. You have to have bright clothing, elastic laces. So
I thought he was trying to get back on the good side of triathletes then, Brad.
Yeah, he does sound like a salesman though, doesn't he?
Yeah, just switches it on.
You can imagine this feel when someone walks into the shop. Now look, this is the price of the shoe, but imagine if you're a triathlete, how much would that wetsuit set you back? This is cheap compared to the wetsuit.
I guarantee you'll never get mental illness if you buy this $300 pair of shoes.
This is the conversation I have when someone who comes in running 100K a week comes in with 6 months. I normally get 2 years out of my shoes and they've fallen apart. And I'm like, you've done 33,000 Ks in them. They're a little lightweight trainer. You wouldn't get that much out of a car.
All right. So which shoes do you find which shoes do you find most durable?
All right. Well, that's not like... This is going to depend season to season. I can't answer that. There's no brand that's more durable than others. Occasionally, a brand will like manufacture a model that might have some kind of weak spot in it where we see them wear out quicker than others. That certainly happens. And, you know, the brands, they're pretty good about recognizing that and looking after wearers. So that's not really what's going on. But durability-wise, it comes down to the outer sole rubber. how strong they are, how it's formed as well. Like, typically, if you're putting a lot of sharp edges on your outer sole, it grinds away a lot quicker. But it also, that normally means the shoe has, like, there's more flex groove, so it might feel a little bit more flexible, which some people like. The uppers, typically there's some sort of compromise around a shoe being light, durable, and the cost of the shoe. So there's sort of three factors here where you can normally have two of the three. That's the way I look at it. It's very hard to find a durable shoe that's also light and doesn't cost that much. It's quite easy to find light shoes that that aren't durable, and it's quite easy to find expensive shoes that are durable, but they might not be that light. So you normally have to trade off somewhere along the line. I normally, like, if someone's running that much, then they should be using a shoe, like, they should give up a little bit in the weight of the shoe for a more tougher material or outer sole. Because the heaviest part of a shoe is the rubber on the bottom. And if you start taking that rubber off to make the shoe lighter, it's going to wear out quicker. And if you start to get rid of foam in the shoe to make it lighter, it's going to compress quicker. And if your meshes on top, if they get thinner and lighter, they're going to break quicker. So it's just a matter a little bit of, like, picking shoes that aren't designed primarily to be lightweight. And then, like, the price difference is minimal, really. Like, you might be paying $180, $190 for a light shoe and $220 to $240 for a heavier shoe. So you're paying an extra $30, $40. But the shoe is going to last you maybe 200 to 300 kilometers longer. So about maybe, yeah, you can work it out whether the math suits or not. What's the actual question?
I don't like doing this because it's going to build you up, but wouldn't actually getting fitted for the proper shoes be good? So then you're wearing the shoes that are perfect for your feet, so then you don't wear them as much, or, like, wear them out as much because they're actually perfect for you, and then you're going to get more wear out of them?
We certainly see issues with durability when the load is being taken in the wrong part of a shoe. So, for instance, if someone's overcorrected, they have too much medial support, which means there's a density of foam that's hard on the inside of the shoe that's softer than the outside, and they don't really need that in their shoe. So they're landing lateral, they're not pronating heavily. They're going to really wear the outside of their shoes a lot quicker than the inside, and it creates, like, a beveled factor. So they're almost like being forced into a position of supination, which means the outside of the shoe takes a lot of load. And you start to punch through the uppers out there, and your shoes take on, like, this uneven effect where your foot always falls to the outside. You see it quite often, actually. A lot of people who use strong orthotics, they'll get that in their shoes, regardless of if it's a neutral shoe or a support shoe. It's just part of the parcel with changing load in and forcing load to the outside of the foot. It means the outside of the shoes will wear out a little quicker. Same with if someone smashes their shoes, like pronates excessively, they're going to wear out the medial side of their shoe a little quicker because that's where the load's being taken. And if they're in a neutral shoe, it might feel better for them to run in. They might not get injured, but the shoe might not last as long as if they start to use a more supportive shoe where it sort of evens up the wear pattern. But there's no sort of blanket answers with shoes. It's really case by case. So, although it says the tip, apart from being a running store, yeah, well, go to a running store, talk to someone who knows, and if you get the right shoe, chances are it'll last longer as well.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, good one. Moose on the Loose, you got one?
Yeah, well, Moose on the Loose segment is going to change a little bit because I'm not an angry man, and I can't keep thinking of things that annoy me without offending too many people or losing my business. So I've got to come up with new ways for this segment. So this segment is a Moose I'm Confused. And what I'm confused about this week is...
He's confused about something he's angry. What's it about, Brad?
He was confused about how to answer that last question. I think it went for about 20 minutes.
I don't have any tips. Russell, just keep running well. Buy your shoes, my friend, especially from local retailers that look after you. Moose, I'm confused. This week I've turned on my FlowTrack Pro account because I like to reward the creators and pay the people that are doing. So I pay for an account with FlowTrack. I don't know what I get out of it, very little. But got lucky and turned on Stanford. Peyton Jordan was about to start. Now, Peyton Jordan's a big-time meet. This is a huge meet in America, probably one of the biggest track meets, I reckon. I think I remember being there and maybe watching Benny St. Lawrence break the Australian record, or it might have been Stanford Invitational. It was one of the two.
What are you doing over there?
Is it Chico State, Pat?
Were you at Chico?
Funny.
Were you really there that night?
I was. I watched him.
Jake Robertson ran that race as well. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. Don't remember seeing him.
Yep, he was there.
No, it was a good race. Good race. Saw Ben St. Lawrence break the Australian record. And also saw Eloise Wellings run a qualifier for 2012 Olympics, I reckon. Same night. Sat next to Eloise's parents.
I'd love to know the story about this, but keep going.
It is a story. Anyway,
we haven't got time for it, yeah.
So, Moose, I'm confused. I'm confused why when Jordan Guzman gets an entry into one of the biggest races on the American distance running calendar at the Peyton Jordan 5,000 meters, first section. He's in with the big dogs. He's in with the big Norwegian that won?
Yeah.
Jeez, freak that bloke. And in with all the big college stars, and then I see Guzman running around with his mullet, Saucony. I thought, yeah, beauty, this is great. I love watching this. And then I read, he's run 3:43 for a 1500 earlier in the afternoon. I'm like, why, Jordan? You're in the best race you've ever been in your life. This is made for you to run as like substantial, significant PB. Like running a 1500 hard in the same day, even the night before, is going to take it out of you. But let alone like the same afternoon that you're running this 5K, like I don't understand why it happened. Like I would have loved to see Jordan come out and like get in that front pack and charge. I feel like he's done himself a disservice running this 1500 meters earlier. This race was set up to run a massive PB. He did run 13:35. He ran very well. He ran a time I'll never even be able to think about or dream of running. However, imagine if he hadn't run that 1500 meters before. Imagine how much fresher his legs would be. He would be less fatigued. He wouldn't have muscle damage. He would be prime, ripe. So when that he was in the second pack, and when that second he made a big move to lead the second pack, and then they kind of went past him a bit. But I think if without that 1500 meters in his legs, he's dropping 10 to 15 seconds. What do you think a 1500 would take out of you, fellas?
Yeah, 1500s are hard.
at least that. And you know, I spoke to him a few days before he was flying out, and I'm not sure if we mentioned it during the interview about what his best distance is. And I almost reckon that the 5K is his best distance. Like when you look at what he's run over 1500 and you look at, you know, for him to run 28:40 at Burnie, like, you know, that's incredible 10K running on the road. So to bring those two into the middle, like, as you said, here's a race where he could potentially run 13:20 or low 13:20s. Like, yeah.
This is what I was thinking the whole podcast that I listened. The whole interview, I'm like, you're a 5K runner, mate. Yeah. Everything about this suggests you're going to smash a 5K.
It seems
so obvious.
I 100% agree. He wasn't in the top 1500 meter race either. Like he won that one.
In the B grade. He won it, yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was odd.
Look, when you get in those big A-grade races, surely you want to be fresh for them. That's why Moose is confused.
Well, yeah, and we're not having a go at him. Like, well, you know, as you said, we can't run those times. And I know Jordan well enough that when he comes back, I'll be out doing a long run with him at Stromlo, and I'll ask him, and I can either get some audio for you guys or report back to what his answer was.
Surely you could send him big dog now, you can send Jordan a message, say, hey, what's up with that 15?
Oh, well, I did actually send him a Facebook message saying, great, you know, congratulations on your results. And he replied, but I didn't ask him this question.
Yeah, so I can't, you're a pussy.
I can't even.
You're a pussy.
All right, I will ask.
Wants to be everyone's mate, not afraid of.
Let's move on. We've got to get going. This week's interview, Julie and Kate Smyth. Good one. Listen to it on my Sunday long run. Do you enjoy it? Well done to Brad last week too. I know we've acknowledged you privately, Brad, but that Jake Robertson interview was, yeah, top notch, and yeah, good insight to what they get up to over there in Kenya, training wise.
Yeah, I had a blast. It was so nice of him as well to give up. Was it close to 70 minutes of his time? He was very, very good.
I'd love a listener to
tired at the end. That's for sure.
I'd love a listener to do a question count on that one. Just, I reckon you fired about 110 questions at him. It was just like bam, bam, bam.
Yeah, like I had pages written down because there was so much stuff we could have asked him, and I got through most of everything I wanted to ask.
He did a ripping job, yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the first time a long document and chat like that's happened with him. So, it was good for us to bring that kind of content to people. But Julian, this week's interview, Kate Smyth, people might not know her.
Well, they should. Mm. She's an Olympian marathoner, Beijing. She was there 2008. So she ran the Commonwealth Games 2006 at Melbourne. She has a 2:28 PB in the marathon, and she has a great story because she came from a non-traditional sort of track and field background. So she's come through the ranks just pretty much running marathons and then getting into competitive running from being almost like a fun runner, to be honest. So, yeah, it's a pretty cool story. And she gives some good tips in there. She runs a business now that focuses on helping runners called Athlete Sanctuary. So she gives a few little tips as well.
Mm. And you got some news for us. What's coming up? Big live show.
Yeah.
Can we break this yet?
Yeah, let's talk about it. Oh, yeah. Let's announce it anyway.
We've still got a lot of time. Yeah.
June the 3rd, it's a Sunday, we're going to be hosting an Inside Running / Nike Pegasus 35 launch in Ballarat at In Exterior Cafe, which is the cafe of one of my run clubbers, Jamie. It's got a great big room. We're going to set it up. The Nike Pegasus is now into its 35th year. That's pretty incredible for a product to last that long. And this new one is the best-looking Pegasus I've ever seen. So that's a big call because it's 35 years of it, and this one now, if you search around Instagram, Facebook, you might see some big Nike athletes wearing them. But I'm pumped for this shoe. And I'm pumped for we're going to have Collis Birmingham as a live interview. So Collis, Ballarat runner, Nike athlete, he has been to Olympics, World Cross Country, World Half Marathon Champs. He's been in Diamond League races. He has done a lot of things, and he's been on the scene forever. And he will be a great interview. So we're going to be doing a live interview with footage shown on a TV of Collis's racing, talk about his experience with Breaking 2 project. We're going to have signed photos to give away. There's going to be 100 people that can come. It'll be Patreon priority. Is that right, Brady?
Yeah, that's one of the rewards. If people chip into Patreon, they get an early release at tickets. So, that's where the information will go to first about how to get a ticket for that one. And then we'll do a Facebook post to put something in the show notes about when they go on sale for the general public. But pretty exciting. Cool to have Nike and the running company Ballarat on board.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait.
It should be. I'm excited about it as well.
We're going to have, there's going to be a bar there so you can have a beer while you listen to the interview, watch some videos. We're going to be selling the Pegasus 35 and it's going to be fresh Factories of Vietnam, straight to Ballarat.
Nike have come on board with a few giveaways as well. A bit more on that later on. A few people will be going home with a few goodies.
I'm excited for this one, and there'll be a good vibe there. We'll release further details when we lock them in, but here is the first announcement of this event. Sunday, June 3rd. And we're looking in the afternoon.
In Ballarat. Julian Spence interviewing Colas Birmingham.
A couple of big names right there.
Very good. All right, let's finish up. Enjoy this interview with Kate Smythe. Thanks again to the Fitzroy Foot and Ankle Clinic for sponsoring this week's show. Check their notes in the show notes. Thanks to the people on Patreon. Thanks to Julian and Brad giving up some time. And enjoy this interview. Thanks, boys.
Born to the river, a blackbird in my veins. I found out when I was just a child.
All right, Kate. Thank you for joining us on Inside Running Podcast.
You're welcome.
Are you aware of the podcast? Have you heard of it before?
I have heard of it, definitely. Yes.
Okay. I think a couple of maybe some girls you run with have listened to it or have been guests, actually.
Yes. Yep.
I know we've had Jen Maloney on, and also I think Sophie Ryan. I think she's going to sponsor this episode, actually.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, from Fitzroy.
Fantastic.
Podiatry. So, that's... it sort of reaches far and wide. Firstly, let's introduce yourself. So, I remember you because Scott Nicholas, my old boss, used to tell me. He used to tell me about this lady that he used to run with in the Dandenongs.
Oh, my goodness.
And how she used to smash him for 3 hours straight over the hill. And I didn't believe him. I said, really? Because he was pretty strong back in the day, and he said, no, she used to destroy me for 3 hours straight. you ran a marathon PB of 2:28, which is what number in Australian history?
I think I keep moving down the list every year because everyone keeps getting faster,
not that many.
But I think I've done to 7 now. I think it was number 5 at the time.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you had... Jess maybe run faster
since then? Jess and Lisa are the two that have got quicker.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, they're pretty athletes.
I know, they're doing great.
You're in great company up there.
And Jess is just starting as I was retiring, more or less. We had a one crossover season where we trained together at Falls Creek, and that was it. Absolutely, and it's great. They're doing really well.
Yeah, well, it's a big boom for ladies marathoning at the moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think we counted that there were 4 ladies under 2:30 in the Comm Games qualifier. 4 or 5?
No, there was at least 5.
5, yeah.
Yeah. The depth is, better than what we've ever had before, to be honest. Yeah, in Australia, so it's fantastic. It's really good.
Yep. Okay, well, we're sitting here in your clinic. tell us a little bit about what you do for a living now about this clinic.
Sure. Well, I guess when I retired from running, I was really looking for something that really lit my fire, like my running did. And so I'd always used natural medicine and integrated that while I was an athlete. And I really found that I got great results with able to have a longer career and just managing injuries and niggles. I mean, I had them like everyone, but I was able to recover much more quickly from them. And so when I finished, I decided to go back and retrain as a naturopath. So that was 5 years full-time training. And then I graduated and I decided to set up some specific clinics for athletes using naturopathy, which... For those who aren't aware of what naturopathy is, it's more or less a healthcare based on natural solutions rather than drug-based solutions. So a lot of chronic conditions that we see in athletes like anemia, chronic fatigue, hormone problems, both male and female, immune problems, whole range of issues that we do, a lot of gut problems, especially with runners.
Well, we might get into the...
a few nitty gritties of that later on, maybe, and sure. give some running advice or some running specific yeah. advice. Sure. But before that, let's talk more about you. So I'm going to mention a name because this is this might surprise you, but Rod McKinney. How does Rod McKinney? Do you know Rod McKinney? Do you know the name?
I know the name.
So I'll give you a hint. He's yeah. from Orange.
Oh. I'll
help you out. So Rod McKinney was the first Australian to run under 2:20 in the marathon.
Okay.
And he's from Orange.
He is from Orange.
He is, yeah. And he broke Ron Clark's Australian record.
Get out!
Yeah, in 1966 in Fukuoka. Oh, I'm shocked that you don't know, because Orange can't be that big. There's only room for one or two of you big running stars in Orange. But he was the first Orange running star.
Okay, there you go.
And he lives just down the road here in Ballarat.
Oh my goodness, yeah. I've got to meet him.
Yeah, you should. He still gets out and runs. We see him there.
I've got to meet him. Along, yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, we'll have to look him up later.
That's a classic.
Yeah, so Rod, yeah, he came in the store one day and he was a bit humble. He didn't really tell me. But then since we looked him up, he's like, oh, Rod, wow, that's really like...
They breed them well in Orange.
Yeah, well, obviously you're from Orange. That's yes. where this is heading.
Yes, yes.
So is that where you started to run?
Yeah. Look, I ran at school, not particularly seriously, like everyone does. I just participated in cross-country, school cross-country and stuff. But I had a really good running community, much like Ballarat. There's a really good runners club there. And I used to go along and just do fun runs in the bush and, not overly serious, just fun stuff.
Yeah.
And then I kind of left running when I left home at 18 and went to uni and partied way too hard and, had a great time.
Yeah.
And then I started working and then I travelled overseas for nearly a year and I ate my way around Europe. I came back and I had saddlebags that were bursting. my jeans were bursting. It was disgusting. And that was really, that year I decided I was going to do two things. One was to overcome my fear of heights and do a bungee jump. So I did that off Vic Falls in Zimbabwe, 108 metres. Yep, I've never had a fear of heights since. And the other thing was to do my first marathon, and I didn't care even if I walked, I just wanted to finish.
Mm-hmm.
So I did Canberra, and at the time I didn't even own a pair of running shorts, so I borrowed my brother's boxers. Not a good idea, they chafed. They were really
silk?
Bad.
Were they silk?
They were really bad. No, they were material, which was even worse. And I remember I drank red cordial throughout the run, and I threw it up continuously afterwards. Not a great strategy at all.
Yeah.
But I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't have a coach. I didn't have a program. I just jogged a bit each day. But I was really amazed that I actually discovered something I really loved.
Yeah.
And as part of that process, I lost a lot of weight, and I got fit again, and got healthy again. And
what age were you when you...
I did my first one. I think I was 28.
Yeah.
27, 28. Anyway, it was later in the piece anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I went back to Melbourne and a girlfriend at the gym just kept begging me, please come and join our running group, you'll really love it. And I was like, oh, I won't be fast enough, I'll get spat out the back, I'll be embarrassed. And she's like, no, just turn up. Anyway, I kept resisting and then the coach of the group ended up ringing me and just said, Kate, just come and if you don't like it, that's fine, but why don't you just turn up one night?
Mm.
And I did. And I loved the group. They were just a really lovely social group of fun runners, all just kind of starting marathoning.
Yeah.
And real mixed ages and professions. And we met at the TAN in Melbourne. And so I just started training with them. And that was the Sporting Spirit group. I'm not sure if anyone's heard of them, but that was an original group of fun runners, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
And that was my first entree into running. And I just sort of, each year, I just kept chipping away. And I did change coaches and changed training methodologies and, through the career, but it wasn't because I was talented, it was just because I just kept putting one foot in front of the other over many, many years.
Well, that's a very late, it sounds like you skipped 10 years.
And I didn't come off a track background, I came off no speed, so I really did it the hard way, I guess, in terms of trying to get to a decent pace. I had to really do things outside the square.
Yeah.
And so it gave me a very different perspective of running, than what others may have traditionally had.
And that first marathon, do you remember the time you finished in?
3:20.
3:20, there you go. Okay, so from 3:20 to 2:28. That's amazing. And so I think that's one, like, a great story, because it does show there's a lot of, like, people have dreams, and, like, someone goes and runs a marathon and runs 3:20.
Yeah.
Still, and that's at 28? Like, that's not
21,
I did it just... That's a really cool story.
Yeah.
So after, like, that first one, you start to train with this group.
Yeah.
When was the competitive element introduced?
Yeah. I went to the Sydney Olympics as a spectator, and I got invited to do the trial. You know how that, I'm not sure if anyone remembers, but they were doing the trial race as a prep for the main...
Yeah.
For the Olympics, just to make sure the course was right and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so a few of us could run that. I think they opened it up to the public as well. And so it was just another, you know, big city marathon kind of thing. And I really enjoyed the hum of kind of being in an elite field and being, you feel a little bit special and you kind of think, oh, wow, this is awesome. I didn't particularly run well on the day. In fact, it was a disaster. But I really liked that experience. And then I went as a spectator to the Sydney Olympics, and I was sitting in the stadium watching everyone come in. And as Takahashi from Japan came in and won the gold medal, the hair stood up on the back of my neck, and I just got goosebumps all over my body. And I just said to my partner, who's now my husband, I just said, oh, my goodness, I've got to do that. I've got to be one of the girls who gets to run into an Olympic stadium wearing the Aussie colours. And it was like a switch. It just totally changed. And I became quite, I guess, everything in my life kind of channeled towards that goal. Without being overly obsessive, I did start putting blinkers on and making conscious choices. You know, instead of going out and drinking on Friday night, I'd have an easier night so I could do a good session on Saturday. Instead of going out with buddies till 2 a.m. on Saturdays, I go, actually, let's just have a dinner, and then I'm going to bed so I can go up to the Dandenongs on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, it was just making those choices. As I started to see more improvement, I got hungrier and hungrier for that Olympic dream. But all the way along the way, I had so many setbacks that it really wasn't 100% certain I was going to get there, right up until when I qualified. And then, and only then, did I realise, oh my God, this is actually going to happen. There were times during that 8-year stretch, and it was 8 years between the Sydney Olympics and then the Beijing Olympics when I got to compete. There were periods there where I didn't run at all. Like, I had chronic fatigue, and I had a whole range of illnesses, liver problems, and a whole range of stuff. And I was on 3 months of bed rest. I was like, as if I'm going to go now.
Yeah, well, it must be hard to look past that. I mean, we have 3 days off and we think it's I think that's just runners in general.
I know, we hate it.
And it must be hard to watch those runners who do never get injured, never miss time, who maybe make the different choices that you... Like, I like the word choice and the concept of making choices, like you mentioned.
Mm.
Because... I see it happen a lot, like potential and thinking that it's going to happen with wrong and then wrong choices.
Yeah.
Because to get to the Olympics, it's not getting to the elite start line of a fun run. It's the next step.
Yeah.
I think making choices is great. Like that's, I like that.
Sometimes you don't always make the right choice. You think it is, but you learn from that experience as well. And I guess that's what hindsight has now given me, in that through that whole 8 years, I made it a lot of really positive choices, and I made some that were too aggressive or ambitious for where I was at that time, and I paid the price as well.
So was there someone advising you throughout that period? Like, who started to nurture your running?
Yeah, I was really blessed. I had so many people who really tucked me under their wing, and some of that was formal arrangement, and other was very informal. And I had a full range. I had a number of coaches, so I transitioned from a few coaches They all gave me a completely different layer and level of knowledge. They all kind of moved me up the staircase.
Yeah, okay.
And they all graciously handed me on to the next person they knew could take me to the next level. They're amazing, like amazing.
Who
all
were
my
they?
All male coaches. I had Brian Skipsey as my first coach. Then David.
David was a good. Dave. I mean. Sounds like a good coach. He had an Olympia. He created an Olympia.
I've got this terrible mindset. Isn't that terrible? No, I remember in a second. And then Sean Crichton.
Sean, yes.
And so Sean took me to Com Games, and we had a ball. Because he was also my training partner.
Yeah.
And there were times when we would turn up to training, and after 20 minutes, Sean was still telling jokes, and I'd have to say, Sean, are we actually going to run tonight, mate?
Relax.
I knew when I started creaming Sean in some of the sessions, I was really fit. And I'd have to admit that leading into Com Games, I was the fittest I have ever been, way before my PB was set.
Yes.
And it was just so disappointing for both of us that Com Games totally stuffed up for me, because it was my fittest time of my life. And then I moved on to a New Zealand coach, John Bowden, and John moved me on to more of a Lydiard model rather than a traditional Australian model.
Yes.
A Bullock, I forget that name, sorry Dave. Anyway, traditionally up until that point I'd been on a bit of a blend of a Chris Wardlaw program combined with a Pat Klahesi, because of Sean's influence, who was coached by Pat, and obviously Deeks was coached by him too. Like, there's a number of people who've been feeding through that line.
They're pretty similar though, right?
Very similar, but slightly different. Slightly different.
Yeah.
But then I also had influences, Trevor Vincent. I call him my, he probably wouldn't like to hear this, but I call him my grandfather of running, because he's always been there in the background and always supporting me through every step of the way. Yeah. And I started being involved with TV just through Glen Huntley Running Club. Yeah. And he started to encourage me, just come and do a couple of cross-country runs. And I would balk at the idea. Yeah. Oh, I'll get flogged. I'll be back a pack, you know. And sure enough, I was. And then slowly I'd progress, you know, over many years.
Yeah.
And that was a wonderful foundation for me over winter season to build strength and endurance, obviously. And I started running with them at Fernie and then going up to Falls Creek each year. And up at Falls Creek, then I was introduced to people like Troopy and Moners and, you know, the broader running group at the time. Karen was up there, Karen McCann, and we had sort of quite a big group of us that were trained together, and I was the fatty out the back, always being spat off the pack.
Well, you've just named three of the best all-time runners.
Seems
pretty pretty good, I reckon.
Yeah, but I couldn't keep up with them at that stage. It wasn't until, you know, 2006 where I could actually stay with them. And then I guess my training also started to go offshore, so I'd then start to switch to doing, in about 2005 I think it was, I started going to Boulder and doing our winter block, but their summer block of at least 3 weeks, sometimes 6 weeks over there. And that's when my running just really took off.
Who encouraged you to go over there?
My first stint was Sean, I think, and I went to Flagstaff in the first stint. I didn't know a single person, but soon I actually hooked up with some of the American runners that were based over there through Let's Run.
Oh, yeah.
You know the website Let's Run?
Oh, I know the website.
And I just emailed them and said, hey, I know you're in Flagstaff. Do you know anyone I could run with? And they just said, oh, just let us know when you arrive. We'll come pick you up. Anyway, so I did. I called them, and they came round to my hotel, picked me up. Within half an hour of the run, the guys were saying, where are you living? And I'm saying, I don't know. I'm just staying in a hotel for a couple of nights, and then we'll come live with us.
But this is the Weldon and...
Yes.
Yeah,
Weldon.
Yeah,
right. So I went and stayed with Weldon.
Yeah.
And then Weldon introduced me to one of his really great mates, Peter, in Colorado, in Boulder. And so then I started staying with Peter. So that's how the family kind of grew.
Yeah.
And then I met a whole bunch of other people in Boulder, and now, although I'm retired, I still love going back there every 2 years just because I've got such great friends. Yeah. Like, it's a home away from home now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have you seen it, well, I mean, off topic a little bit, but Boulder's changes?
Massive changes. Yeah. It's got really quite busy now.
Yeah.
And, look, Denver is kind of creeping out a little bit too close to Boulder now, geographically, but Boulder is really smart. Their council was one of the first in America to get the residents to vote to increase landmass, to increase their rates so they could buy more landmass, that now circumnavigates the whole town so they'll never be built into, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they've got this beautiful green belt, and it's great for the environment because of all of the bears and the, you know, the mountain lions and deer, everything can still go on their path.
Yeah.
And it means that everyone's within, I don't know whether it's 800 metres or a kilometre of an open parkland. Oh, like a big...
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's inactive. I mean, it's
an brilliant
place. Yeah.
It's so active. Yeah. Even in winter, everyone is really active.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool.
It's a really healthy environment. Yeah.
Let's talk about the Comm Games.
Yeah.
So, before you got to the start line, what sort of sessions, you mentioned it was probably the fittest that you ever were. So what sort of sessions were you doing? Do you remember the workouts?
Absolutely. At that stage I was still sort of doing the Australian kind of style of running. So it was pretty stock standard in terms of sessions, Tuesday, Thursdays, long tempo Saturdays, and then long run Sundays.
Yeah.
And I do a long tempo up to probably about 16Ks on a Saturday,
yep.
Building usually. And then the Tuesday, Thursday would either be a fartlek and a few different fartleks. If I was sharpening up for a race, it might be a mono fartlek. It could be a longer one, which was one of Dave Bullock's ones, which I call Portsea fartlek, which was 3x3 minutes and 3x5 minutes. With a minute recovery, and then 4x1 minutes really fast at the end. That was another one of my favourites, probably, of sessions. And then I'd do 8x1Ks, but I never stood. I always did a float recovery, so never fully recovered. I used to come up to Ballarat a lot on Wednesdays to do a long run, and I'd do that usually 90 minutes, but I'd do it at a pretty quick clip.
Yep.
With the guys up here, and the same with Sundays. Sundays wasn't a dawdle, it was a fairly quick clip.
Yeah. As Scott alluded to.
Okay,
cool. Well, I mean, we always discuss the Australian training method and how it differs to maybe some more new school approaches.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, it worked for so many people.
It did.
If we read the Australian, there's a book came out from Runner's Drive called... Australian Marathon Stars or something
yes.
And I mean, you're in it, and I read the training, and I'm like, one chapter, they say, oh, what was the sessions you're doing? And then I'm like, oh, have I read this already? Because then every other athlete has the same session.
They're really similar.
Yeah, but really then the really interesting thing is, like, they're the top 10 Australian runners,
uh-huh.
and they're all everyone's doing the same thing. And so, there's a very good argument that why aren't we all doing that still? Because that's not the way that people do it anymore. Oh, well...
Look, it's a really interesting debate because I would have to put preface around that in that, yes, it worked for the cream that rose to the top, but it doesn't always work for everyone. And I think that's the key, is finding the thing that really makes you hum. And I'd have to say, I wasn't on that program forever. My program changed all the time.
Yeah.
I went through a block phase where I'd have that kind of training, and then I'd go through another build-up phase where I'd just do base for 3 months. And then I'd go through a phase of doing much more shorter, faster stuff because I was training for a 10K PB. Like, it changed all the time. It wasn't a sit and fix, whereas some of my competitors, and I wouldn't... I wouldn't be speaking out of school for them, but a lot of them were sit and fix. And that's just what made them tick.
Yeah.
If they had a change, they broke down. And so they just stayed within their comfort zone of doing that, but they had natural, gentle progression because they were very good with their recovery. And they always, they really listened to their bodies. And I think that was the key, one of my greatest learning experiences, was observing those who listened to their bodies and observing those who just smashed themselves regardless.
Yeah.
And pay the price.
Yeah.
And I think that's when we hum, when we're running really fast, we should actually back off by 10%, whereas most of us have that natural inclination to keep pushing. And it's being able to listen to your body saying, I'm on the cliff, I could fall off here, or I could fly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just being able to just pick that.
Yeah. That's
that point.
That's where I think a strong advisor comes in as well. Like,
yeah.
Someone that you respect and trust.
Absolutely. Yeah. Who can just pick it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep, totally.
So you get to the start line, Melbourne.
Yep.
Home crowd. Mm. Have you run the course? Any long runs?
Yes.
In training?
Yeah, I had. Yep. Sean and I had done the course several times, actually.
Yeah.
So we knew the key points and, we knew the rises, the falls, the turns. Yeah.
What was the plan for the day?
The plan for the day was really to sit in the pack and to just get comfortable for the first half of the race and then to start really coming home hard. And that's the way I trained. I did a lot of my long runs negative split. So I was prepared for more of a race style marathon rather than a big city marathon where you can even pace it. But the plan was always to run my own race, but to try and definitely keep up with the lead pack. And my times around then were leading towards something around 2:30s, low 2:30s. So I was kind of comfortable that I could keep up. You know, it wasn't out of reach.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I made a couple of mistakes and it all fell apart. It was an absolute shocker.
What happened?
Well, I was up at Falls Creek. This is just part of the issue, complicated issue. I was up at Falls Creek and the weather had changed from being really nice and warm to freezing. And I was possibly a little bit on that edge at that stage and I developed a really heavy flu. So I was given antibiotics to try and dry everything up, along with other things. And I didn't feel great, but I was so full of mucus and crap. I had to do something. And then my strategy was always with altitude to train up until a couple of days before I raced. That's my window was always the first few days. So I left it to the last minute before I came down off altitude, which in a normal situation would have been fine, but it just meant my body was fighting off an infection at the same time as coming off altitude. And it was freezing up at Falls Creek. It was freezing. And then I hit Melbourne and we had the hot patch. So my body's trying to adjust to a lot of different things. So I started quite dehydrated because of the medications and just the situation. And then my mistake, but I was keeping up with the Kenyans they were starting to surge quite early from about 15K mark. They were starting shenanigans then, just trying to blast us apart. There was too many of us in the group. And I was on the outside of the pack going through the drink stations and I couldn't cut across and I didn't want to lose contact. So I kept running rather than grabbing my drinks. And so I missed the 15 and I think might have been the 20K drink mark. They were they're the most important drinks you got to have. And I missed them. How did I do that?
Yeah.
Anyway, so from about 22K onwards, I just started to go down like a deflating balloon. There was nothing. There's nothing. By then, I was having all my drinks, I was having all my gels, I was doing everything, but the damage had already been done. Like, I was dehydrated. And then the temperatures just got warmer and warmer, and I just started just losing neurological function. Yeah, so I don't remember a whole lot from about 30K onwards. Things started to switch off. Like, my sight started going really blurry. My control of my muscles, like we had to go up over Birung Ma, over the bridge into the stadium.
Okay.
And I leant back because all my hip flexors disengaged and I leant back and I was still running like I was running backwards, like at a crazy lean backwards going into the stadium because I couldn't engage my hip flexors to bring me forward again. It was really wild. It was the most out of body experience I've ever had. It was like I was a puppet and I could hear stuff. I could hear the roar of the crowd when, like, 80,000 people screaming your name is just, whew. I kept thinking, will you guys just shut up for a minute? I'm trying to get to the finishing line. And I looked across and I just thought, I've only got 300 metres to go. I've just got to get across there. And so I did, all I could do was just one foot in front of the other. And then I got towards the line and the line started really blurring. And I couldn't work out where my feet were in terms of were they in front of me, was the line behind me. And then I kind of just I think I just stumbled and then I just fell over and I was gone and I don't remember anything beyond that apart from when I woke up in the medical tent and I was packed in ice and I was pretty much all butt naked and
yeah.
Thermometers everywhere and yeah, it wasn't particularly joyful.
Well, two similar stories come to mind. Alberto Salazar had the same thing happen at was it Foreman Road Race where his body core temperature was so high that they nearly pronounced him dead at the end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it was a similar thing.
Yeah.
And also, Callum Hawkins in the Commonwealth Games.
I know,
the Scottish
right?
Fella. So
yeah.
Were you watching that race?
Yeah, I was.
And what were you thinking?
I just got shivers. I was feeling nauseous. Like I was just like, oh no! Like just so close, you know, so close yet. So far. And the thing is, I know there was this whole debacle about people not helping him, but if they helped him, he'd be disqualified, and that's why people couldn't help me either. They wanted to, and but if they did, I would have been totally taken out of the race and not able to finish. And I can understand why people were saying, help him, I get that. The first time, they shouldn't have touched him, but the second time, it was really apparent he was not going to finish, yes. And he was really bad. I do feel that perhaps help could have been a little bit more quickly, but he had to give him permission. That's the problem.
Yeah, he obviously went into the detail with this situation. Interesting to hear because you went through the exact same thing.
Yeah,
but you made it to the end.
I did, only just. Yeah.
But a hot day. What time did your race start that day?
That's a good question. I think it was really similar to this Com Games just gone. And then the guys were a little bit later as well.
Oh, okay.
And the guys, I remember, like, Shane Lane Curvis and, you know, the other guys that were racing that day, their feet were split into, like, Andrew Leatherby's feet when he, and I think it was Shane as well, when they took their shoes off, their feet were split. Like, instead of having blisters from the heat, they were split, like, like the folds of their skin came apart and they had to cut their shoes off their feet because the webbing had gone through their feet. Like it was so disgusting because it was so hot and because the course had so many turns that we don't often have, there was extra pressure on your feet on a hot surface. So it was pretty wild. Everyone suffered.
Yeah. And so did you have to take a long time after having a rest?
No, that's the crazy thing about it, is that once they pumped me full of IV, I had 7 litres of IV fluid.
7 litres?
Yeah, and I was 41.5 degrees. So yeah, I was cooking. I was half a degree off total muscle meltdown. I was very, very lucky.
Mm-hmm. See, when I hear that, see the Callum Hawkins situation, we don't understand how dangerous that is.
It is really.
Yeah.
It is very dangerous. But the thing is, if you've got a great medical team, which we do, and we did when I was there. I was very blessed that they jump to, you know, they don't waste any time.
Yeah.
In.
Yeah.
We know what to do. And so you recover really quickly. In fact, that was one of my best recoveries ever. Because I got the fluids in. Yeah. I got everything that I needed in straight away. Mm. And it's not through the gut, because the gut's inflamed after you've been running.
Yes. Yeah,
can't handle it.
Straight to the source.
So that night, I had an after-party celebration sort of thing. And I didn't feel fine, but I felt great, you know, in comparison to the way I felt before.
Yeah.
And the next couple of days I felt okay because I couldn't go hard enough to get the normal DOMS that you'd get. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
that's
crazy,
something you want to do, though.
Oh, no.
We'll take the DOMS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you ran 2:28 at Nagano.
Yeah.
That is nearly double your half marathon PB.
That's it. Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
How did, like, anyone else would maybe go out at the pace and think, this is my half marathon pace, I'm cooking it here. Like, that's, maybe it wasn't the smartest move for most people to go out that fast, according to their half marathon PB, which most people use as an indicator.
Yep.
So you must have been brave, confident, or silly to go out like that.
Oh, just silly. No. Yeah. No, I always knew my strength was one pace wonder. And I always knew that from my training because I never I never, in the last few years, I didn't do my long runs as pedestrian runs. I did them as hard runs. And my runs would typically get faster the longer I ran. So I knew, for me, my strength, and especially when I was in a competitive field, they would have a kick at the end that I didn't have because I didn't have the track background. So I had to really draw on my experience in endurance and my strength in endurance of actually just pacing myself so that I could get the best time. Because if I went out easy at the beginning, I couldn't go fast enough to catch up.
Yes.
I couldn't keep up with the 32-minute 10Kers. I mean, I was nowhere near it. So I just had to run at my high-end threshold and hold that for as long as I could. And as I got better, I was able to hold that for longer, that pace for longer. So I went downhill, sure enough, in the last 5K, but it wasn't as much. You know, the slowing down started to really shorten.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and in Nagano I did a negative split, and I didn't even look at my watch till about 35K mark. And my brother was there at the time, and he was riding this ridiculous fold-up bike with the seat missing. So he looked like a clown. He looked so funny. And I remember laughing and then looking at my watch, because I really didn't want the pressure to be on that race, because that was the first race back after being really sick. And I just looked at my watch and went, holy dooly, if I keep running like this, I can actually qualify. This is amazing.
Yeah. The adrenaline just shoots you.
And I just went, I've always had this thing where I visualize. Every 5K I have something that I visualize. And at that stage of the race, 35K mark was always Farlap for me. This strong, powerful horse that just gallops to the end, you know, just an absolute stayer. And so I just, in my mind, became Farlap. And so I just bolted for the line as quickly as I could. And, I visualised running 2:28 for at least 3 or 4 weeks before I went to that race, because I knew if I ran 2:33 or 2:32, I wouldn't get picked. Based on my performance in Com Games, if other girls were going to be faster than me, they'd get the posse. I'd just, you know, I didn't have a great track record there. So, yeah, I was working with a performance coach at the time, and she said to me, Julie Rennie, and she said, nah, she goes, you've got to chunk this up. That's her term, chunk it up. You've got to actually blast this out of the water. You can't just do a couple of minute PB or whatever. You're really going to have to run much faster to get picked. And I'm like, oh my God, that's a 5.5 or nearly, what was it, 2:33 that I'd run beforehand. So yeah, 5 minutes plus PB. And I'd been sick. Like, this is my first run in 8 months, 9 months.
First race.
First marathon back.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, ooh, okay. So what we did was this sounds very obsessive, and it was, but it worked. I set 2:28 in my watch every day. I set it in my clock. I had stickers that I put on my computer. I had it on the fridge. I had it on the toilet. Everywhere I looked, I saw 2:28, and I meditated every day, and I went through the race in my mind, even just for a couple of minutes, what time and what I would feel during the race, and how the energy would flow, and, you know, just having the best possible race and how that would feel for me inside. And come race day, it was like I handed over the reins. I just said, well, I've done everything I can. I'm just going to leave it up to, you know, fate now.
Yeah.
And so I was really relaxed, and I was excited. I wasn't nervous. I was really excited. And I turn up, and here's Tegla LaRoop on my right, and here's, you know, some other fast runner from Russia on my left, and somebody else from Ethiopia. And I'm like, holy smokes, this is a bit scary. But we all just started out, and it just flowed. It was the most beautiful, effortless run I've ever had in my life. It's the one and only race that I would cherish, not because of the time, but because of the experience. Like, it was seriously like I was floating. It was effortless. And when I finished that race, I was not sore. I had no DOMS. It was like I hadn't done it. It was just smooth. And I think my running form was so smooth and in great form, and nothing was tight or pushing. it just kind of, the cadence just happened.
Yeah.
And it was very low key as well, which suited me, rather than too much rah-rah and too much congestion in a race. It was over sort of narrow little laneway roads in the back of this Japanese small country town equivalent. And so you're running through all these beautiful Japanese cherry trees that were blossoming and out through the paddocks and stuff. It was just, it was very relaxing for me. And they played like this Japanese drum that, I'm not sure if you ever heard of, but it's this guttural, primitive drum that just fires up your instincts and makes you roar inside. Yeah. So I heard that and I just, oh, yeah, it was really amazing experience, actually.
When you finished coming off that, is it hard to get back up for other races, knowing that that was, like, this is my race? Like, I don't think I can ever run that well again, or I don't think I'll ever feel that good in a race.
Mm-hmm.
Is it hard to get back up?
Initially, to be honest, I thought, I actually finished that race going, I think that's the race of my lifetime.
Yeah.
I actually thought that at the time. But I also knew from my training before that and before Com Games that I had more.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that in my mind I was training at a pace of being able to equate to about a 225. And I thought that was probably my all-time PB, not 228. But I got greedy after that experience. And going into the Olympics, I overtrained. And so going into the Olympics, I was fatigued. And I was overstressed, and I'd kind of put probably a bit too much emphasis on the Olympics. I should have really focused on a mental attitude like I did going into Nagoya. A bit more relaxed, a bit more chilled. But hey, it was the Olympics, you know, and everyone says that, you know, you're the one who puts the pressure on yourself, and you do. Like, but you feel it. You feel this weight of expectation.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Because it's the Olympics.
And the prep leading into the Olympics was shocking. It just, nothing really went to plan. And so I felt like it was disappointing that that was my last hurrah, so to speak. Because beyond then I had other injuries and I never ran that well since Nagoya.
Okay.
I guess the lessons I learnt from those last couple of years were probably more, you know what I mean? Like, I had lots and lots of just repetitive things come up all the time, you know, niggles and stuff that just sideline you, and you just go, damn it, I am getting old after all.
I started late.
That's it. And you have a lot of competing priorities when you start late. Yeah. You know, career, family, everything, they collide all at once, and it's kind of like, oh, which one do I choose now? You know, because... Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah, those choices, you start making different choices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I really would have liked to have gone back for London, but my body was really saying, I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, there's a question that I really want to ask.
Hmm.
I remember, it was about altitude and Brad. Do you know Brad Croker? Have you met Brad?
Oh.
Well, he was involved in the AIS, and he really remembers you from living in an altitude study. Or
and I got sent home.
Yeah. Why?
Oh, because I got sick.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
From the altitude? Or
No. That was at the stage where I was, I think at that stage... Yeah, that was the chronic fatigue and insulin resistance and a whole bunch of stuff going on there.
So didn't work out living in...
Didn't work out, No.
Okay, well, now you're the founder of The Athlete Sanctuary.
Mm.
So you help a lot of runners, don't you? I'm not sure if you mentioned who you help or not. But I know of a few.
Yeah.
And how do you help them? What is it that you do? Like, from a... Do you help them with training, or is it more around their nutrition? Or
I do some individual coaching as well. That's sort of more remote, just setting their framework and their training program, and then I encourage them to work with groups that are nearby, because they tend to be remote from where I am.
Yes.
But I also do a lot, I do nutrition, but a lot of athletes come to me because they've got conditions of some kind, whether that be they have gut complaints that are inhibiting their running, constant anemia, that's a really, really common one, constant repetitive immune things. I'm getting a lot of junior, very, very talented junior athletes coming through, a lot of them with nasal problems, you know, like repetitive sinusitis and hay fever and all that sort of stuff, which leading into competition is a pain in the butt when you can't breathe.
Unless you have access to some good thyroid medication. Is it the thyroid medication?
No, not thyroid for nasal.
Oh, yeah. This is just a reference to Galen Ruff. You know, his asthma, he takes...
He's
on the therapeutic use exemption.
Yeah, he gets tons of steroids. Anyway. Well, longer term, that's not a great thing, to be honest. it will catch up with him. But there's a lot of even just general anxiety, performance anxiety, that is really on the rise at a very young age. Yeah, I've got patients who were in such a state where they would just literally throw up continuously before they would perform, and that doesn't... You don't have to have that, you know, that's not necessary. And then, there's a lot of overuse stuff. There's a lot of mature athletes, masters athletes that have come in that still love their sport. And if they just tweaked things, they could still hum.
Yeah.
Yeah, at a different level, but they could still hum and enjoy their sport. And so that I help them with a lot of anti-inflammatory stuff, understanding to work their load to their benefit now.
Yeah.
Because I think we can sometimes get stuck in a pattern that no longer serves us, and it's being able to give people, I guess because I've got the running background and the nutrition and the medical background now, to give people a slightly broader perspective. And I'm not like a normal practitioner in that I will say, you've got to stop running. You know, that's not the solution. I work out a solution that's going to be functional or able to be used, practical for the athlete.
Yeah. So, where are your clinics?
In Ballarat, in Melbourne, and just more recently in Torquay.
Oh, cool. You're open down. Because that's where you live, right?
Yeah. I wish I'd discovered those trails earlier. They're awesome.
Well, that's the next thing, and maybe we'll finish up talking about what you do now. So, ultramarathoning, is that what your sport is now?
Look, I wouldn't really call myself that. I've dabbled in it.
Yeah.
I have dabbled in it. I'm certainly not training for anything this year. I have done one 50K, and that was an off-road hilly one, and I loved it. I really enjoyed it. It was just like no pressure, and it was, the trail running community is much more relaxed. I found, like, everyone just high-fives everyone in the middle of a race, and, like, I don't know, if someone's hurt their ankle, everyone stops and helps them. It was just a different environment to hard road racing where you go and flat chat, you know, heads down.
It's less friendly on the roads, put it that way.
Yeah.
On the trails, there the competitive element's not quite there.
It's not the
same. That we see.
Just a different feel.
Yeah, it's more welcoming.
Yeah, but people are still there to do the best for themselves, which is what I really love, because it really broadens the participation.
Mm.
It's not as much you have to be a hero on the day, it's let's just all finish.
Yeah.
And I love that. Like, I really, that's why I started running in the first place, and that's why I always want to run, is just that joy, you know, the joy of running.
Yeah.
That's it. But I do, in the very back of my mind, I do have that I'd love to do Comrades at some stage in my lifetime. And I would love, I know this is a really random out there, but I would love to do a 50K PB on my 50th.
Oh, wow.
I don't know specific. Whether that would be a record that is outstanding, but it's just something off in the horizon that isn't, unfortunately, too far away from me.
what month is your birthday?
September.
Oh, okay, so great.
Yeah.
Surf Coast Century.
So who knows where that might be.
There's probably a few.
But that's... Yeah, that's something. So I've got a few years to.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. But
parting advice for someone coming from your angle of the running spectrum. Mm-hmm. So coming down in, from endurance rather than your traditional track runner coming up.
Yeah.
What would you do differently?
Mm.
Would you focus more on speed next time around?
Well, no, actually, it wasn't till I worked with John Bowden from New Zealand, who put me more on the Lydiard, that I was probably felt more comfortable with that style because it was very endurance-based. Not so much 400s, not so much fast stuff.
Yeah.
And I thrived on that longer endurance stuff and building the base for 3 months just really suited me. I didn't get sick once when I did that.
Yeah.
So for me, I think the greatest advice is find something that works, and that can take years sometimes. Try different stuff. Don't get stuck in a rut and think I've got to do what everybody else is doing. Yeah, really tweak it and listen. Yeah, really listen to your body. I think coming from an endurance end, one of the things that John really taught me was work to your strengths. Don't keep trying to fix your weaknesses.
Yeah.
We've got this philosophy of we've got to get faster on the track before we move to the marathon. It doesn't have to be that way. It really doesn't have to be that way, and I think I'm testament to that.
Yep.
In that if you keep gradually improving, you will get there. It's a different route. Yes, it's a different way of getting there, but you'll still get there. Yeah, and you will always be... You've got to get comfortable with the fact that you've got to run with faster runners. In every other race, up until your key race, at every distance, I would get flogged, you know, all the time. But I used those races, the 10Ks and the half marathons, as really good pacing to then set me up for, you know, my marathons. And I had to really let go of the result of those ones, not get caught up on, oh my God, I came last at, you know, Intercollegiate Cross Country this week. Yeah. Doesn't matter. It was 8K.
Yeah. Just put yourself out there.
Just, yeah, have a go. Yeah. And use it. Like, use it to your benefit in terms of the training benefit that you'll get from it, rather than the race outcome.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I like it. Further your strengths.
Yeah.
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 Thank you very much for coming on.
You're very welcome. Yep. You're very welcome.
We'll say thanks to Sophie for sponsoring this episode.
Thanks, Sophie. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. See you. Pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Oh, the sugar of my skin. Doesn't matter if